Welcome to the Nerdtastic in 3D podcast.
It's Nerdtastic in 3D. Oh, it's Nerdtastic in 3D. Yes, it's Nerdtastic in 3D. It's Nerdtastic.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Nerdtastic in 3D, episode number...
Woo! Sync.
There you go.
Episode number 21.
It was convenient because the GoPro was literally looking right at me.
Hence why Josh said you. Hey, episode number 21, we are now legally able to drink.
Yeah, that's why I'm drinking right now.
Beers.
Are you?
Beers. Hey. I clapped.
Cheers to all.
I clapped. Jack synced for us.
For anyone joining us for the very first time, Nerdtastic in 3D is a podcast of animation, visual effects, car industry
okay,
folks.
You don't need to look at me like, what does that idiot
exactly.
do? How did he end up in
and
this
we
room?
Are basically
tanning professionals?
We are basically a group of people that specialize in different areas of things nerdy, and we
amateur balloon animals.
That would be nerdy.
I dabble,
and this podcast is all about a dedication to things that we find nerdy, and we will talk about.
This is probably one of the roughest intros.
That's because you all jokers have interrupted it 60 times by now.
All right,
make me a bike clown.
Make me a bike clown.
My name is Jason Carter.
Adam, hold on, waiting for the GoPro to get around so that I can do it. Adam McFarlane, pointing right here at you.
Pointing right.
We really need five people because the GoPro doesn't turn fast enough.
Well, then you had the two before.
Oh.
And I'm Josh LeBrot, everybody. Sorry.
And joining us,
and I'm,
like normal, however, from a slightly remoter location, hence why you don't see him amongst the group on the video, is
Jack Geckler via Skype in my beautiful office.
In
from
what
home.
Town? What town?
Awesome Town.
There it is.
Look up Awesome Town on Google, and you will find where Jack lives.
Third site on Google.
Is it?
I don't know.
Sure
but it's
third.
I don't
page 18.
I don't think it's one.
So, gentlemen,
I don't think it's the first link. No.
Gentlemen, we have to start tonight off by something that a link that we passed around, which we will share with everyone, which is called Push to Add Drama.
Which
now,
was amazing.
We are all fans of viral advertising, yeah?
Absolutely.
Like decent viral advertising.
Absolutely.
So the premise of this is that in the middle of a square in a town in Belgium, mm-hmm. that this unknown group of people sets up a button. And the button has a giant sign over it and an arrow pointing at the button that says, push to add drama. And there's shot of just people going about their day, and a bike rider rides by and kind of like sees this button and kind of what's going on. And then all of a sudden he hits this button. There's people all around the square, and this ambulance comes out of nowhere, just sirens are blazing. And these two ambulance guys get out of the ambulance and they go inside this little apartment and they grab this guy out on a stretcher and they pull him out and they drop him off the stretcher and then they pick him up and put him back on and put him in the ambulance and then they pull out and they forgot to close the doors and he falls out of the back. And basically, just chaos ensues.
Then a shootout happens.
Yeah. There's a shootout. There's football players at one point.
There's a hot chick riding
a
sport bike.
In lingerie.
Yeah, God,
it
that's
is
a dream.
Just chaos. And
think flash mob,
yeah.
but a thousand times cooler.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And here's the best part.
Because there's guns.
Here's the best part. After everything kind of leaves the square and things are kind of like emptying out or whatever.
Removed by football players.
Yeah.
The football players come out and move the dead guy. A giant sign, a banner, just falls down a building, and it says, TNT, we know drama.
Yeah, or it's like, want to add a little drama or something. But yeah, it's a great
brilliant.
It's such a good...
What I love, though, is in the beginning how everybody is starting to kind of collectively go, what is this button? And no one like goes around
who's
kind of...
Who's going to be the first to push it?
Exactly.
Oh, it's absolutely brilliant. And then my personal favorite part in the whole video is when the bike rider... is riding by the ambulance, hits the driver's side door of the ambulance, falls off his bike, gets in a fist fight with the ambulance driver,
the guy takes his shirt
who
off.
Rips off his shirt, and he's got a tattoo on his back and bulging biceps, and they get into a fight, and it's hilarious.
Yeah. That was actually
me,
by the way.
Tell me you guys didn't think of Sinister Story when the black SUVs roll up and jump out.
Yeah. Okay. I won't lie, the one thing
remove the bum.
I mean, I thought of it as, I mean, I watched it and loved it, and the things I thought of was like, first, how the hell did they get permission to do that? Like, that was the legitimate first thing I thought of. Before,
you can film anything you want in Belgium, apparently.
Belgium apparently doesn't give a shit. But, I mean, not to, like, before they even started the gunfire, was that Mercedes come flying in and sliding around. I'm like, that would be really hard.
Like, it totally
it did, like, a
right
180 and, like, slides in, and that guy's still standing by the buttons, and I'm like, what the fuck? How did
did you see
I'm surprised
when they
nobody
off?
Pushed a
yeah.
stop drama.
Stunt driver style.
Yeah, no, all it was legit. Them? It was legit.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff.
Now, is that going to make you watch TNT?
Nope. Certainly going to make me watch their commercials, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what's on TNT, honestly.
But, like, what was the other one that killed it? Oh, the old, the Sony, the Bravia commercials, the like no other, color like no other.
Oh, yes.
Where they did the bouncy balls in San Francisco, and they did the big paint.
Oh, they did the bunnies.
Yeah, the bunnies.
Bouncy ball in San Francisco. There's a lot of debate about whether that's real photography with real bouncy balls or CG.
I watched the behind the scenes.
It's 100%
watched
real.
The behind the scenes.
I worked with the director that did that.
But there's a lot of debate in the industry about that, which is interesting.
Unless they CG
Josh
the behind the scenes.
It right
I'm
now.
Debunking it. Here you go, everybody. On Nerdtastic in 3D.
Debunked.
April. What's the date today?
11th.
April 11th, 8:24 p.m. The balls are real.
That's going to be the quote of the podcast.
The balls are real.
The one that wasn't was that yarn one. Did you see the yarn one on the pyramids? That was bullshit.
No.
Didn't see the yarn.
They draped it down one side. But they did that one. They had the paint one, which was awesome. The fireworks.
What about the
stop motion clay?
What about Philips Carousel?
That one was awesome.
Which one?
Oh.
It's the frozen bank robbery that's frozen in time, and the camera basically goes through this entire, like, two-minute-long
scene. It was. It was for their 21.9 TV that really caught on.
Yeah, it lasted all of 30
seconds. I was actually super surprised. What was it? Is it Lowe's or something with all the paint flying through the streets and then goes
that's
and does...
That's a cool commercial.
What commercial is that? Cool
super
We should
impressive.
Link all these. We should put all these up.
There's a lot of really cool commercials. I don't know how you guys feel. Some of my favorite ones right now are still the was it Sherman Williams that does the paint swatches to build like houses and animals flying around, but it's all through paint swatches.
No, I haven't seen that one. Also, don't have cable, so it's hard.
that could be. But you also do have like $1,000 surround sound system in your bedroom, though. That helps.
$150. 1,000 watt. So,
$1,000.
Not what you bought it for, what it's worth.
Oh. Bought it for like $12.
Yeah.
Hey, Jack, I got a question for you.
Sir?
What is your most anticipated game of 2012? What are you looking forward to playing the most?
Oh, that's a good question, sir.
More COD?
You know what? Actually, no, not even. I think that's become a given. I'm just going to be excited to play whatever they put out. But something I saw not too long ago that had me pretty excited was the new SimCity. Believe it or not.
Oh, that's right. We talked about that one.
Is that coming out for Xbox? Or is that just a...
It's online, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it HTML5 or something like that?
It will be a multiplayer game. It's just... But the way it looks and what they're trying to
do
now and the graphics are up to speed to be able to handle some of the stuff, I'm super excited about.
I just want to know, will it have that button that you can push that just makes disasters happen? Because that was my favorite part.
Push to add drama?
It was literally, and then like so awesome Godzilla showed up.
Push to add drama.
And...
well played, sir.
Adam,
hats off to you.
Jeez, I don't know. I'm not up enough on games.
COD 5. COD 5.
Obviously, given. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I really don't know.
COD 5 won't come out.
No, here's what I
was saying. It'll be Black
Ops. This is what I want. I want... Top Gear of the game. Yeah, right. I want to play the new Assassin's Creed, but I know it's going to be the same thing, and it's going to annoy the hell out of me. I'll buy it, play it for about an hour, and be like, shit, it's the same thing.
I got it again. They got me again.
Those suckers got me again. I literally have the last one, and I've played it for maybe an hour, and I was like, oh, shit, I shouldn't have traded in all my games.
You're better
this.
Than me. I got the first one, played through it, and then goes, yeah. I
bought the rest of them?
I know, and then I bought the second one. Thinking, yeah, it's the first one was a lot of fun. Went back and played the first one. Was like, this is boring.
Yeah.
Josh.
See, Halo's that for me. And I know, Jason, that chaps your ass to hear. But Josh has talked me into every Halo I own.
Yeah. Dude, you just got to get it.
This one's so different. It's different.
5 hours out of all of them.
That's funny.
Josh.
So,
2012.
Well, I will say one thing. Kind of about the industry in general.
Only one.
Before
are you going to go philosophical all of a sudden?
Not philosophical, but with Hollywood as well as rehashing kind of old games and, you know, the year of the sequels and stuff like that, I find that there are few new franchises that are really every year that, you know, a lot of times you're coming, you know, a game will come out or a studio will come out with like an idea of a game. It's just like, oh, this one's blah, blah, blah. And it just gets a shit ton of hype, you know, obviously does well, which warrants sequels. I don't feel there's been a lot of aggressively new titles that every year people are excited about. Like people were juiced when the first Gears of War was coming out.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a new franchise. For sure. Nobody played. Same thing with Mass Effect. You know, that type of game. Now every year, there hasn't been one of those in a long time. Now everybody's just like, Uncharted 2, Uncharted 3, God of War 3, Call of Duty, blah, blah, blah. You know, all these are just basically sequels. So going along with it, same thing with Assassin's Creed. It was great when it first came out, got a lot of hype. You know, the game did pretty okay, but, you know, the sequels have warranted more than, you know, more press than the first one. So with that, just because I'm a huge Halo fan, Halo 4, that's coming out at the end of this year.
Holiday,
Is it for sure? Or is it going to get... Is it Halo keeps getting bumped?
No. I'm looking at a list right now. It says quarter 3, 2012.
Yeah. So I would say Halo 4, which, you know... Again, is just another sequel to a franchise I already know.
That's a good point,
wish
though.
It was something, though.
That was a new thing.
Like, what is the last... I mean, we can get to Jack first, but then we'll go dive into the...
We did Jack.
What did Jack say? Oh, yeah, he was the first one.
So I'm gonna go here, and I...
Thanks, Adam.
Sorry, bud. It's out of sight, out of mind.
I'm going to agree. Amen.
Who's Jack?
I'm gonna. So there's a couple of games I think Fez, which we're actually going to talk a little bit
more
about in the later in the show. And
that was awesome.
Fez actually came out, I believe it was last week,
mm-hmm.
and it was 4 years in the making. We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show, but that was one for me that was big. Mass Effect 3 was definitely big. But I definitely am excited. I know we'll glaze over this. Minecraft is being released on the Xbox console. I'm pumped about that. But I'm with Josh. Most excited game for 2012. I know we've talked about this in the past. Halo 4. And the reason I ask all of you is because, Josh, I was hoping we would end with you and be able to say Halo 4, you and I together, because the Microsoft studios have started to do their ViDocs. They started to do their video documentaries about the making of the game, the process, the start the hype engine that is the Halo marketing universe.
It's a real easy engine to start.
And one
thing,
too, to interject with that, it's not Microsoft that's doing it. It's a new studio that's doing it.
So Bungie was the former developer.
Correct. I should...
And they were actually an independent... They originally were purchased by Microsoft or were a subsidy of Microsoft or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then they've broken off.
Yes.
And they've now handed over the reins to 343 Industries, which is Microsoft Studios. So now there is an internal Microsoft studio that's actually making the game. So now it's in
their first attempt.
Exactly. It's in Microsoft's hands. But the reason we bring it up is because... We'll again post a link to this. But Halo 4, they just announced the composer of the music... Which, as we talked about last week, as we discussed, that game soundtracks are so big and so important nowadays, and that Halo is, Josh, I know you and I felt this way, one of the pinnacles of game soundtracks that's out there.
Gamedom.
I think there's a lot of speculation, a lot of interest as to who's going to take the reins now that Bungie's not on board and Marty O'Donnell's no longer doing the music. So it's interesting. So they announced the composer, and it is definitely exciting because they put up a little post of some of the music. The composer is Neil Davidge, and Matt Dunkley, I believe, is the actual conductor. And they put up some samples. Davidge is what it is.
Matt Dunkley. And Matt Dunkley did Inception.
He was a conductor.
That's one of my favorite soundtracks. And what's also cool about Neil, I realized after watching the videos, the work he had done with Massive Attack, which is one of my favorite bands.
I like Ominous Tones, though. Love Ominous Tones.
Yeah. So they put
nothing wrong with that.
They put some samples up for people to listen to. And I don't know how you guys felt, but...
They were awesome.
Yeah.
I really liked it because it kind of kept that... Nostalgia?
No. Like stars. Like out in the stars. Hold on. Let's guess what he's trying to say.
Duck. Boss. Bird. Christmas tree.
Baby fish mouth.
Orchestra.
Fish.
Orchestral.
Orchestral.
Orchestral?
Orchestral?
San Diego?
The Poral?
San Diego.
San Diegonites?
Orchestral?
Orchestral.
Agree to disagree.
God, that was a difficult word.
When in Rome.
I used to have a real problem with judicial, just FYI.
You've said, you know, judicial and something else about the Jews. Let's just watch it.
So, hey, we got
the explicit
orchestral
rating on podcast.
It still keeps the orchestral sound, but he definitely brings more of a you know, kind of industrial, a little bit of kind of not a techno-ness, but just a little bit more of like an upbeat edge to it.
Industrial's
he's
a really,
got the electronic vibe, though.
Yeah. Industrial's a great word for it. I mean, and if you watch the video documentary, there's stuff in there about like using sounds to actually help the music, kind of like how they did on Lost. You know, they used airplane parts to actually as musical instruments in the soundtrack.
Yeah, Lost was good, huh?
And so, you know, similar to that. Like, so I think industrial's a great.
Yeah, running through like, they're saying like, you know, do this, pipe it through a guitar amp and... You know, just really kind of get these more kind of raw, edgy, you know, sounds mixed with the, you know, the ahs and the oohs of, you know, the original.
Well, see, and I think it's actually not the orchestral part of it that sticks with me, but I think the real thing that you pointed out that stands out is the choral part of it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the choir, it's the, it's all that stuff.
See, like those strings that... play along with it. Those to me is just that. To me is like one. That is like not a separate thing in my eyes. Like those things play off each other so well,
right?
That I'm just like that is one sound.
Right. So it's good. I agree. They kept that. So we're gonna post that link. It's definitely worth you know, close your eyes, listen to it, whatever. There's some really really good music in there. Definitely. Hi guys.
Hi.
How are you?
I have to real fast. I have to take SimCity. They're saying SimCity's 2013.
Oh wow.
On
Jack,
this list.
Nice.
Ah, exactly. So
wow. Nice. My game, that was a fail on my part. But looking at this list, I will say what I did forget is StarCraft II: Heart of Swarm, which is the second part to the StarCraft II series that I'd be excited about.
Second part to the second part, huh?
This list is it's pretty
Jack's
interesting.
Really screwing the pooch
list,
here.
There's a lot of games coming.
Well, here's a question. What was the last original? I mean, non sequel game that you were excited for?
Portal.
Portal? Yeah, okay.
I guess
the original one?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But yeah. I will definitely say I got more excited for Portal 2.
Sure, but not taking out any sequels.
But Portal.
Portal?
For me, definitely.
Hmm. Probably Gears for me. I'm
I
with Josh
say probably,
on
I would probably
that was probably
Gears.
The last one. Or maybe Epic Mickey. I was kind of excited about that.
Have you played that yet, Jack?
We're not asking about what he's playing.
Jack is so excited about it, he won't play it because it won't meet his expectations.
There's a good logic to that.
Yeah.
Also,
I've
it's
had
on the
that game though for probably over a year.
And you know what the biggest handicap for that game is? It's on the Wii, and that sucks balls.
I think that's what it is. I think the fact that, and I thought that was going to be what was going to get me to play the Wii. I have, but
yeah. Well, Jack, you'll be stoked that Epic Mickey 2 is coming to Xbox, PlayStation.
I do see that.
So it's
and there's
go
another
hopefully
Epic
they'll
Mickey.
Up
there's
the
Epic
graphics.
Mickey 2, and then there's Disney Epic Mickey Power of Illusions for 3DS.
Wow! Again, the handicap there is the 3DS, huh? Who wants to play on that?
So, Jack.
Yes, sir.
Shifting gears slightly.
Oh, wait. Shoot.
Adam doesn't want us to shift gears.
Damn it.
Okay, too late. We're shifting gears. You wanted to talk about that there was some interesting news today, this week that happened about an internet personality that actually had. Do you guys have something you'd like to talk about?
He asked if what I remembered what I was going to say is worth it, and I said, nah.
But now that we're talking about it, do you want to bring it back up?
I saw a commercial, and I don't know if you know, but Fruit Ninja has an arcade game. Did you know that?
No.
Is that Dave and Buster's?
Yeah, that's why I saw the commercial. See?
There's a giant screen that you can just basically do like.
Can you imagine like drunk people just
like,
all over this thing?
Arm movement. Like,
oh, Jason's bored with it.
I'm waiting until you guys are done talking about it so we can
move on. Let's talk about the beauty of video, though, that is we can pick up the nonverbals of this. Jack, could you hear me sigh?
I saw the sigh, and I envisioned you. Because
the camera's here on me, and do I look like
Jason.
I'm super
That's
into
all I
this?
Got.
Okay, so Fruit Ninja, I remember what I was going to say. It was relevant had I been able to remember it instantly, which I couldn't. So,
exactly.
Jason,
brain
moving
fart.
On. Yeah, moving on.
Don't look at me. I didn't do anything.
Jack.
Go ahead, Jay.
No, it's all you.
Yeah, that was his segue to what you were supposed to bring up.
I've already segued.
So this week, this is for any of the viewers out here who are into YouTube at all. One of the original YouTube commentators and somebody whose videos actually got me into playing Call of Duty, Sean Hutchinson, who went by the name of Hutch on YouTube, decided to bail out. And I know that probably in general to most people listening is probably – you're like, what? Some kid on YouTube stopped putting up YouTube videos. Okay.
Quit the tube.
Wah.
Yeah, exactly. So with this kid in particular, though, what was interesting is he started doing videos back in Call of Duty 4 and was one of the first to start putting up gameplay videos and then talking over them. Before that, a lot of people who had posted gameplay stuff had just posted up, hey, this is a game, and they would post up little snippets. But he would do whole games, and then after that, he started actually letting people in on his life. And that transitioned into him actually getting a job at Machinima. And for people who don't know what Machinima is, it's sort of like an IGN-type company that's based solely on YouTube content. They have Machinima Respawn, which is like first-person shooter games, Machinima Realm, which is like World of Warcraft, and so on and so on and so on. And they actually offered this kid, he lived, I believe, up in San Francisco at the time, an opportunity to come down to L.A., and work in their West Hollywood office and sort of live the dream. Come down here. We're going to pay you to keep making videos and be on TV and on our YouTube content and do this up. And me and Josh and Sean actually got a chance to meet him while we were sitting outside drinking at E3.
Nice.
Super cool guy.
Nice.
Josh, you met him.
Yeah. Nice guy.
Yeah, very super personable. Nice guy. He decided within this last week to not only quit, but to bail out of the scene entirety, meaning he quit Machinima.
Wow.
He's quitting Twitter. He's quitting YouTube. He said he wasn't going to play video games potentially for the next year, which led to the point of a couple things that made me think about this and I wanted to bring up to you guys was like the what it must be like for, say, somebody who potentially is just another bedroom nerd playing video games who's like, hey, I want to do these videos. I think this would be kind of cool. To within the span of a couple years having something like, you know, 100,000, 500,000 subscribers to your channel.
Jeez.
To getting a job at maybe your dream job place and then being not hidden behind the screen but potentially on screen and then actually becoming somewhat of a pseudo celebrity and how that transition is. And it from the gist I got, it sounded like that was a bit much for him to have that much of his life out in the open now to the point of, I need to just not do this at all anymore. Hmm. So, I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on that? I mean, think about, like, right now, like, what we do with this show and Nerdtastic. I mean, given our 10-viewer audience.
I thought we had a dozen. Baker's dozen?
Yeah, I think we're at a dozen. If we hit a point of having, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who are actually watching us and whatnot, I mean, is that something you guys are comfortable being able to deal with? Do you think you're like, oh, shit, okay, now people know what I do and are going to want more of that on a daily basis? Because I think that was part of his problem is that once you hit that level, there's this expectation of continuing to keep that up.
Yeah.
Well, there's also different levels of being a Sir Webbity. Get it? See?
Oh, Jason, of the that's web. Right up your alley, buddy.
It's awesome.
I'm looking at you, bud.
Barely chuckled.
It was awesome.
I know. You know, because there's also, you know, it depends on if we're just a voice and we get fans and, you know, whatnot and stuff. If we're out and about, people aren't going to know who the fuck we are by, you know, a picture or something like that, you know, from our website or, you know, it's the constant videos of being, if you're in a web series, you know, people are seeing that and they're seeing your character of whoever you are. And so when they're out, you know, there's a sort of interaction of like, you're blah, blah, blah from blah, blah, blah. And then like they associate their life with you because of your character and everything. So there's that. And then there's also like voice radio. Kind of perfect example. me and my wife were at Kevin and Bean's April Foolishness, which is a, you know, once a year comedy special that our radio station here in LA, K-Rock, puts on. And we got these tickets called I'm Better Than You Are, which were kind of like the most expensive tickets that gave you this little pre-party kind of VIP thing. Tickets in the pit, like in the first couple of rows with a shirt that you can put on the back that says, if you can read this, I'm better than you are, because basically I'm in front of you.
That's so douchey.
But they had you know, Kevin and Bean was there, Lisa May, people that are on the show, for people that, you know, have listened to it. They were there, but I'm sitting there going to Christine, oh, that's them. She's just like, oh, that's them? Like, yeah. You know, as much as the status is, if they were walking down the street,
you would never know these
people. Even though you may be a fan of their show, you don't know who the fuck they are.
Yeah.
So there is that different level. But at the same time, you know, I would say bring it. And I would try it. I wouldn't sit there and say, I can't handle this before I even, you know, have gotten into those shoes. But what about you, Jason? I know you're a kind of... You know, you're in the spotlight of your work and being a supervisor and being, you know, in front of, you know, many people giving presentations.
Dozens.
You know, can
dozens.
You just imagine putting that into a larger, you know, spectrum?
I think there's there's a very big difference.
There is.
Between having fans and
there
having
is.
To do presentations for people.
But it's also
They're
the fact of being, it's also the fact of being comfortable enough to be in front of people like that. There are closed and reserved people that stay behind the mic and stay behind closed doors because, you know, this is who they are and they don't want the world. They hate the world.
Right. So I think, Jack, if I understand kind of the question you're really getting at here is with a certain degree of fame, right? Fame's a little bit of a fickle mistress and it's...
I like that.
Mm-hmm. It's something that once you reach a certain level of fame, there's this almost, I don't know if expectation is the right word, but something that just comes with the territory of your privacy really becomes minimal at
best.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And, you know, there's all kinds of people all over the world that strive for fame, you know, whether that's in the music industry, there's bands that want to make it big, or that's in animation, I want to be the best animator, I want to be a voice actor, acting, all this stuff. And, you know, there's this whole – this happens all over the place. It happens with big actors. It happens in music, definitely, where people kind of taste the spotlight, like the spotlight, go into that world, and then realize that, well, wait a minute. You know, what happened to my privacy? What happened to me being able to shut my door and be able to play video games and not worry that someone's bashing me on Twitter right now? You know, and I think that it's an interesting part of nowadays, in particular, with all this YouTube sensations and all this instant access to hundreds of millions of people across the world, and how fame kind of just blossoms out of nowhere these days. And so it's something that people really, you know, need to think about. Were it me, I will tell you that I am very, very comfortable in front of people, absolutely. And that's a part of it that, you know, I think if you have that, it's going to make it easier for you to chase fame. That being said, I am certainly someone that values my privacy, absolutely. You know, I'm not a person that's out every Saturday night telling everybody who I am. I'm a stay-at-home kind of a guy. Right. So I do this podcast not so that I'll be famous one day, but because I like doing it with my friends.
Yep,
absolutely.
And so were it me, I actually applaud the guy. I applaud the guy for not ruining his own life, but understanding that he realized his priorities were different. That, you know, the highest priority in his life was actually maybe these other values or these other reasons for leaving the company, and that
right.
not just the company,
that's
right?
The
but
gist.
The whole
that was the gist I sort of got from his conversation. That it was taking over, and that he needed to get back to what maybe some people deem as reality. I guess
sure.
But it's funny because it's stuff that like you and I take for granted, right, Jack? Like, you know, the fact that you can. You're talking from home right now, and no one actually knows where your home is versus
right.
Really
awesome, it's awesome town. Well,
right. We established that much. But, you know, versus, like, let's say a really big Webwoody, as
there
Josh
you go.
Would call it. And someone that they're – or, you know, let's actually take it more extreme. Let's talk about the people who live in Hollywood, the big stars, and the fact that there are, on an hourly basis – tours that go by their homes with tons of people pointing out their front yards.
True.
And it's they're very, very different extremes. And the thing that you and I take for granted is the fact that there aren't people who know where we live, and there aren't people who are out there stalking us potentially. You know, that potential doesn't really exist for us.
I tell you a crazy story along those lines, and to give him sort of props along the same lines as you were, Jason, saying, you know, you commend him. I do as well. He was one of the commentators that got me into wanting to do commentating for my own self. I appreciated what he was doing and said, hey, I could do that. Along with another guy by the name of Woody's Gamertag, who's around our age a bit more. And he posted a video not too long ago that just blew me away. And the story was that there's this thing, and I'm not sure if you guys have heard about this, and called swatting, I believe is what it's called. And what's crazy is it's the same thing with him. I think he has close to a million subscribers. He actually is a YouTube personality, does Call of Duty videos amongst all this other stuff, but has his face on screen all the time. And he's the one I think I had mentioned at one time before who had quit his job. He actually had a job as an engineer at Cisco, making a lot of money, to now do YouTube full time. Which is just a crazy thought to me to start with, but that's what he's doing. Part of that, though, comes the same thing that came with Hutch, which is this celebrityness, and part of that comes the potential haterade that people drink on you for being in that position. And this swatting thing came in, which it's where somebody will call the local police department for where you live, and what they'll use is a for people who are hearing impaired, they have that telephone service that'll actually like fax in a message of like you talk and then it faxes in a message. They'll fax in reports of there's a man in the house trying to kill his wife right now. It's getting out of control. And they'll keep the messages going until the police department literally will send in a SWAT team.
Holy shit. That's a thing?
And what's crazy in his story is this legitimately happened, and I'll post a link to the video. He did a two-part talk about this. His wife was upstairs doing what she was doing. He has two kids. I believe both were in bed maybe at the time, and he's walking around. And his wife called up and goes, there's somebody in our front yard. And he looks out, and it's sure enough, there's a guy behind the front yard tree who ducks behind it when he sees him.
Holy shit.
So Woody, I guess he lives in North Carolina and is a gun toter, went in, grabbed the shotgun, started downstairs. When he got to the base of the stairs, he heard through the two windows, I guess, on the other side of his door, saying, "Sir," or he cracked the door open to see what was up and instantly was getting barraged with, "Sir, put down the gun." And it was like out of a movie.
Oh, my gosh.
They came to the front door. He put the gun down. The SWAT went through the entire house, searched it, and everything else. And this has happened to him so many times now that the police department just gives him a call and says, Woody, is everything okay? And he's like, yes.
Wow.
And they what would you guys do if that happened? And that's all from YouTube celebrityness.
How do they know where he lives?
I think that's really internet, easy these days.
Yeah. Exactly.
Go ahead.
No, I was saying this is the weird thing I was thinking of. It's just like, especially, I mean, I haven't followed Hutch or any of these guys. Honestly, YouTube commentating, Jack, yours was the first I watched on Call of Duty. And then I've watched.
It's the bar now, Adam. It's the bar.
I'm not going to lie. I think your bar has been replaced by Sinister's. just saying.
Damn, you Sinister.
I know, right? He's got a few more epic stories. But regardless, I think. In the initial, I mean, especially back in Call of Duty 4, there was this assumption of anonymity with these things where, you know, you would start this channel and obviously this Hutch story kind of blew up and he got this opportunity. But those types of people aren't the ones that are pushing to be in front of the camera and pushing to, you know, be on screen and be in movies and be in TVs, where it's this type of personality that is constantly seeking spotlight. Notification and spotlight, and versus like what Hutch was doing, which was a response to the spotlight, mm-hmm. versus an actively seeking it. And so, you know, maybe it's that type of personality that just isn't meant for it.
How do you feel about it, Adam?
You know, honestly, it would need to, it would be a pros and cons kind of thing. Like if I'm making, you know, like these celebrities, or if I somehow am making, we'll throw out a ridiculous number, like 10 million a year, and you know, someone's granted, I don't want to get swatted. I know. And so that's what I'm saying is like there's a price point where it's like, yeah, sure, SWAT knows me and they call me and see if everything's okay. Sure, there's a price point where I can deal with that. But what these guys are making, I don't think it's worth it to me. And I love doing this, but literally we could turn the cameras off and I would still be doing this with you guys.
Yeah,
so
totally.
That's kind of an irrelevant thing to me.
I think there's something to be said. This is I was alluding to earlier, and I'm finished this thought. Is there's something to be said about like fame is attractive, like
sure.
right, like celebrityness or having people like fawn over a talent of yours is attractive, like to just about anybody. I think that's one of those things. Like everybody,
you'd be lying if you said you didn't.
Right. Everybody wants to be rich. Everybody would love to be famous or whatever. But I think the thing that's really fascinating is when a person can set that aside, even if you've had a taste for it, and just realize that in your life there's something that's more important than that. And like, I think that's the real thing. I don't even know how old this guy is, Jack, but I mean, I just think it's a cool thing that somebody could realize, hey, this is something that everybody in the world wants, but I'm actually willing to set it aside for something that everyone in the world already has.
Well, there is also, too, right? In my opinion, where there are people that just can manage both. Like, you know, sure. you know, there's tons of, you know, very famous people out there that we don't know anything about. You know, sure, because of Hollywood and everything like that, you may know the area where they live or their house because it's on a tour and stuff like that. But you don't know intimate details of their life. You don't know, you know, this. They don't cause a ruckus.
I'm with Josh. I think, you know, one actor that just came to mind with that, I think Johnny Depp has somehow managed to do an amazing job about
it. He's so freaking eccentric. How has he not been, like, for his characters and the what he portrays, he's
one
that surprises me.
Like, right now, do you know where he lives?
I don't know, somewhere in California and Spain, probably.
France.
It's in France. Yeah.
France. Which house? We probably got nine.
But it's an interesting, yeah, it's an interesting concept.
And this was one thing I was thinking of, especially considering these, and it just kind of came to me with this whole fame and riches thing, is like, would you want to be, like, all of the drawbacks of being famous? Like, you think of all these celebrities with the paparazzi, and obviously there are celebrities that don't deal with that as much, but all this paparazzi and stuff. If you weren't getting paid a shitload, like, would you even want to deal with that at all?
I'm going to go ahead and guess that by the time you have enough fans that are going to cause problems in your personal life, you're probably making.
But this podcast guy, you know, that was like, it's not worth it to me. I'm getting so many calls. I'm getting so many emails. Probably wasn't. I mean, I'm granted, like, I escalated it to A-list celebrity where they're making, you know, $50 million a year. But, like, you know.
We're probably making more than he is.
Yeah. Like, would you want to get harassed like that without, like, what is your fame to riches scale? Like,
I'll pay you $1 million to sleep with your wife, you know?
I think it's a trade-off, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Maybe we're making more now, but the trade-off is like, but if you could say, hey, you're already doing YouTube videos in your free time, and I'll pay you as much as you're making now to just do that.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Yeah, and that he was like, cool, awesome, this sounds fantastic. And then you just don't think about all the you know, the trappings that come along with that pseudo-celebrity.
Like, I know one without, you know, giving away his name or anything like that, but, you know, there's one actor that I know that's, you know, in, you know, web series and stuff like that, and, you know, I've been around him, too, where, you know, when we're out, people will know. And, you know, especially, you know, even more so, like, with, say, Comic-Con stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the nerd
community,
you get
a congregated group
like
of people that are following that.
You're
kind
sitting
of thing.
There, and you're standing with this guy, and he's, you know, people will sit there, and they run up and take pictures with
That's
him
funny.
And stuff like that. And he just rolls with it in stride. But he's not making really any money, you know, whatsoever. And he would like to. Don't get me wrong. Like, he wants to hit that level.
But his love of what he's doing is still outweighing any of the hassles, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of it's all.
Because it's ultimately, too, his way of, you know, trying to make it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think it all comes down to, and I think even, I mean, we all do this. It's a pros and cons. I mean, is what I'm getting out of this job, is what I'm getting out of this worth all of the shit that comes with it?
Right.
And, you know,
it's basic human decision.
Yeah, it's like okay, honestly, you're going to pay me $10 million, but I can guarantee I'm going to get this many.
Here's the really tricky thing, and I'm this is semi-segueing, but like this guy, Jack, who's quitting cyber life.
Right.
Is that even possible?
Yeah.
Like this guy's, he's got a bunch of people who follow him on Twitter, and he's got.
I think it's easy to tell yourself, hey, I'm not going to do Facebook anymore. Yeah. I'm not going to Twitter anymore. I'm not going to Foursquare. I'm going to check out from having the world know my every move. And I think it is possible. I think it's hard for people nowadays to do that.
It's possible with, especially if somebody has such a negative, I mean, like, this is not going well, you know?
I don't know if it was negative for him. I mean, maybe it was. I just think the overall for him, this, the gist I always got from his old commentaries is, he lived a pretty simplistic life, and then all of a sudden he was thrown into what all better use of a term is the L.A. meat grinder.
Huh. Yeah,
and that's for anybody. I mean, and this, for anybody who moves to L.A. who's getting ready to get in the entertainment business, it's a culture shock.
I guess I didn't necessarily mean was he capable.
Oh, okay.
Is it actually possible?
Like, oh, I don't know. You know, the way I look at it is I'm sure over the course of a while, it'll wear down. And because I just can't imagine somebody who went from really just doing it for fun and becoming this pseudo celebrity to just sort of letting that all go away without occasionally throwing a bone out there. You know what I mean?
I don't think you guys are even understanding my question.
You're saying, can you literally be off the grid? Like, can a person literally...
Is it possible to drop Twitter, drop Facebook, and you've had followers, 500,000 followers or whatever it is. Is it even possible for them to not find you nowadays?
I think they're going to continue to find you, but if you actively don't participate in anything, don't respond, don't do anything, it'll trickle off.
Yeah. Like they'll leave
it. If you're like, hey, make more videos, and you're like, don't say anything.
Just like a girlfriend.
Eventually, yeah. Like,
you're sitting there and you're like,
I
loved her. I'm never going to stop thinking about her. And each day goes by, it's like, and I don't think about her as much this day. And then there's this day.
I mean,
you can search her on fucking Facebook.
The
you can
internet
find
is
her on Twitter.
Your girlfriend.
She's there.
The internet
like
is your girlfriend.
Fans are fickle. Yeah. They all have ADD.
Yeah.
You know, out of sight, out of mind. A lot of these guys on
just
YouTube,
like
the way they became popular is just from the fact of being able to consistently put content out.
Yeah.
You know, me putting out a video every 3 months isn't going to get me anywhere but a thing from Adam saying, I liked your video, but Sinister's is better.
Yeah.
So, you know.
You got to commit.
You need a little more history. You need that story. You need that I was walking around Washington, D.C.
Can I tell Sinister stories in
I
my
think
commentary?
That's okay. I actually think that's okay.
Are they copyrighted?
Yeah.
Patent pending.
Trademark. Copyright.
So we've been...
I'm going to tell stories that are all about Jason. Like Jason Carter. Yeah. So check this out. So
there's only six.
I became a supervisor at Disney. So
holy shit.
It was an amazing jump.
There's only six stories.
Yeah, there's only six. Oh, just FYI, congratulations to Mr. Jason Carter.
There it is. Big supervisor.
Who has gotten a well-deserved promotion.
Atta boy.
You know, who is basically kind of a big deal now.
Mr. Manager.
Oh, look at you.
Now we just say manager.
Oh, now I'm being modest. No. I'm not anybody important. I don't do anything.
I know where you live.
It takes many people
we're
to
SWAT
make a movie.
You. What's
many
it called?
People.
What's it called? Swatting?
Yeah, we're going to SWAT
We're going to
totally
SWAT the shit out of your house.
P.S., how crazy is that shit? Right?
That's bonkers. Who I can't even that? Imagine. That's insane.
Jason, can you imagine somebody showing up at the house, dude, at night with you, like Katie and Eloise there?
And you're like, what?
I can definitely imagine Adam has done that to my house.
Yeah, sure, I kick doors down and whatever. I've got my Rambo face paint, but that's different because we're family.
So
came
let's,
from a place of love.
Let's slightly steer away from this.
I don't know how we steer away from this.
Just by saying that we're going to.
I'm so into this visual, though.
So
you're in, Josh?
I'm in.
We've been reporting to you guys periodically, to anyone who's listening, that YouTube has some pretty interesting statistics, right? So originally we reported that for every 1 minute of the day, it's like 6 hours of video footage gets uploaded to YouTube. Well, then we reported that for every 1 minute of the day, 10 hours of footage get uploaded to YouTube, which means at the end of 24 hours of you watching YouTube, you're now 10 years behind. Apparently now that number has just skyrocketed. Are you guys ready for this?
Yeah.
For every 1 minute of the day, 20 hours of YouTube footage.
For 1 minute.
And this is one thing I want to bring up. Is do you remember, crazy, did I send out that link that randomly brought up one of the least viewed videos on YouTube?
That's right.
Like, you don't even need to watch the video. Watch the first 2 seconds of the video or just read the description. And maybe spend 5 minutes just clicking through videos and realize how much shit is on YouTube. YouTube sucks. Like, the shit to good stuff ratio is, like, is astronomical.
It makes you wonder, like...
It's astronomical.
Do you think there are people out there that manage YouTube that are like, man, can we just... Can we pull an Apple and start, like... filtering
you're
this
like,
stuff.
Look, honestly, no one gives a kid that your fat kid was trying to eat peaches, all right? No one's going to watch that shit, all right? I'm not kidding. That was one of the random ones. You laugh. I'm not even kidding. I'm not kidding. And I left even out the race card because it was a different race, and it was even funnier. It was a fat Asian kid trying to eat peaches.
That's awesome.
I won't lie, it was fantastic, and I kind of was hoping it was going to go viral, but it didn't.
That's just
tell you what they thought.
That's comedy
I was just
gold.
Like, it was like, oh, It was like you feel like it was some person that didn't know technology. That instead of hit send to friends, they hit put on YouTube. Like it was like I don't even know how this got on YouTube.
So, do you guys know what the Google 20 is?
Google 20?
You ever heard of that term?
Never. Enlighten me, please.
So, Google has a policy. I believe it's still active. that Google has a policy where 20% of your time, your work time, can be spent on something other than your job.
I like the sound of that.
So you can go to work and you can Monday through Thursday, let's say, Josh, you were hired to work on the Google Street View team.
Awesome.
And for Monday through Thursday, you are working on the Google Street View project, cool, advancing it, driving cars around, whatever it may be. Then Friday comes along and you can now work on anything you want that will advance the company. Say you have you love YouTube, and so you know what? On Fridays, I want to work for the YouTube team. And Google not only allows this.
I have heard about this.
Not only do they allow it, they encourage it. Now, here's the reason I bring it up while we're on the subject of YouTube. YouTube, a lot of people don't actually know this, but YouTube has had stereoscopic viewing on YouTube, 3D YouTube, for like a year and a half now.
Seen it.
And there's a decent amount of content out there. So if you have a pair of old school red and blue glasses or you've got a fancy 3D TV, YouTube has you covered. And you can watch 3D in all kinds of different viewing mediums. So here's what's interesting. That project, as I know it, and I could be wrong here, but the story that I heard is that that project was actually a member of the YouTube team, one of the engineers on the YouTube team, and he just said, okay, I'm going to spend my 20% of my time basically coming up with a way for YouTube to be able to accurately display 3D content for, you know, the billions of people in the world. And the, here's the best part. It was so successful, Google's like, cool, and now it's a feature. I just love that story that this guy was passionate about.
Here's the thing. Was it just so successful that it worked? And it's going up or so successful because so many people were wanting that content.
No, I think it's the reason I think it's successful is that something was actually accomplished. That was an added feature that Google can then go, cool, well, you work for us, so we can use that.
Is it kind of like the have you seen the Domino's commercials where one random guy like made the Parmesan
bread?
Yeah, the Parmesan bread thing. I'm pointing to the computer because if fucking Jack was here, I'm just like, yes.
Jack, you get me.
You get
me.
virtual
computer. Computer, you fucking get me. But you know me?
They're like, oh, you know, this was brought up by an idea from a guy in Wisconsin or something like that. And it's
they
just,
do know cheese.
He made one of these things, and it's just like it's.
Josh play board games. Yeah. We just kill it. Don't even have to say anything but one word.
I've been a part of that, and it really hurts.
But it's just, like he.
Because you sucked at him.
Whatever.
The commercial goes on to saying, like, you know, this was made by just somebody working in our stores, and we work with such a great company that can take an idea from somebody as small as this. And so it's kind of along that line. But, you know, obviously it has to, you know, be. Lucrative in a
way. Well, I think the difference.
I'm saying goodnight to my daughter real fast. She wanted to give a shout out to the show.
What up, Dylan?
See you, Dylan.
Dylan.
So I think the.
Hold on. I think she's actually going to give a shout out.
Oh,
is she?
That's a first on Nerdtastic in 3D. That's all I'm saying.
Did she say anything? We couldn't hear.
Yeah. Can you repeat it?
Oh,
yeah.
Hold on. Hold on.
Squeeze her again.
Come here, little one. Come here, little one. You say Nana. Nana.
Oh.
I love you.
Oh.
I love you too, Dylan.
Love you, Dylan.
Good night, Dylan.
Yeah, we went there.
Yeah,
we
your
went
dad's
there.
A
Let
turd.
The tears roll, kids.
Your dad's
Let
a turd.
Let the tears roll.
So I think the difference, Josh, is you're talking about a guy in Wisconsin was capable of coming up with a good idea that a company took credit for. That happens all
over America.
No, they
didn't take credit.
America.
They gave him 100% credit.
Okay.
They're like, this was made by blah, blah, blah in blah, blah, blah.
But we're using his idea. Great. Okay.
He works for him.
So I'm going to pitch... I'm going to pitch an idea to Disney that I've developed on my own time. I've come up with this whole idea, and Disney's
not a
gonna
good
be
idea.
Like,
not a good idea.
And Disney's going to go.
Strongly advise against it.
And Disney's going to go. Okay, great. Yeah, we'll totally use that, and we'll even give you credit for it. Here's the point. Here's the difference. This guy could have very well created this recipe for this crust or whatever on his own time. I could have written my screenplay on my own time. Google encourages you on their time to do something creative. For them.
Yes.
I think that's the difference. Yeah. That's the real difference. It's like DreamWorks doesn't say to you, Josh, hey, you know what? I know you're on Project X Turbo.
Yep.
You're on turbo. And but you know what? Why don't, for 20% of your time, you can go work on, you know, the next short film that's coming up. Whatever you want to do, man. Whatever you want to do for 20% of your time. That doesn't work like that. In fact, I would say I would be surprised if you'd find another company in America that operates that way.
No, I see. Yeah.
So I think that's the real interesting thing. The reason I bring it up is 3D on YouTube's been around for a while. Google recently just announced that, hey, guess what? You know what's really popular in 3D TVs? Auto conversions. So you can take just a straight mono, you know, 2D image, and it's actually going to, on the fly, try and like cut it apart and like,
feels like
add
a fun
depth
game,
to
right?
it. And
like, it's like a let's see what happens.
Yeah. So like Jack and I watched one of these on a Samsung TV. Jack, do you want to go ahead and describe this experience?
Jack?
No?
Jack?
What, oh, you segueing into our experience where we
you
just
was
turned
that,
on.
Yes, why don't you tell everybody like, about this?
Was it New Hope or was it Empire Strikes Back where we turned it on and said, this is going to be awesome, and it's where the Millennium Falcon's being sucked into the Death Star, but instead it was the Millennium Falcon sucking in the Death Star to
I
it.
I bet that's how George Lucas really wanted it.
Yeah,
probably.
It could be. You never know.
Wasn't it, I don't, and, you know, people that listen to this, it wasn't the Death Star. It was a, and see, I'm going to fuck this up too.
It's okay.
But wasn't it an Imperial ship?
Oh, yeah, I thought it was the opening of Star Wars.
You're right.
It was the opening.
No, Josh. No. It was the Death Star, but it wasn't the Millennium Falcon. It was the ship that they hijacked. It was the Imperial ship that they were trying to get onto the Death Star with.
I'm sighing in disappointment.
You're talking about the...
No, they were in the Millennium Falcon. They just were
getting sucked in.
No.
I know the scene you're talking about, Josh, but that's not the one that was on the screen.
Ah, gotcha.
Okay. So besides the point...
Hey... I'm just trying to be nerd
the
accurate.
Point, yeah. The point here.
Nerd
is,
accurate.
Wait,
nerd
wampa.
Accurate.
Yeah, that's wampa. The wampa. The point being?
I'm wondering if the point has now passed.
No, it's auto 3D. Like, this feels like a ridiculously funny thing. You're like, hey, you remember that ridiculous YouTube video I sent you with the fat Asian kid trying to eat peaches? How awesome is that going to be in 3D? Probably not awesome at all when the peaches are trying to eat the kid.
I'm sorry, that is awesome. Oh, Peach
Jason,
is trying
I think
to eat
Adam
a kid.
Hit the nail on the head with that one.
But no, but like, I mean, it's just it just feels like this one of those, like the exact description of what happened with the Star Wars, where it's just this let some algorithm just guess, because it's all just an algorithm, right? I mean, it's all just a, you know, nobody's sitting there in YouTube going, okay, I think the focus of this scene is going to be the kid and not the peaches or his high chair.
What is the algorithm for it?
Like, how does it work?
So Google won't say publicly, obviously, but they have said that it's based upon 3D movies that have been done and 3D footage that's been uploaded to YouTube. So they've compiled...
What the hell is that based on? That here is the screen literally in the middle of, if it's 100 pixels... By 100 pixels,
I would have thought it maybe
50
was like a
pixels
focus,
is going
like
to be halfway.
Was it focus, maybe?
I
there's some kind of
would be guessing.
I can't wait to see what is popping out with the, you know, the peaches or the high chair.
You know, the thing is, and Jason could attest to this. It's easier for that kind of system to somewhat work to automate things when you work at a 3D studio where things are rendered in asset base. It's different when you hand somebody a 2D image.
Yeah, it's like
that when they do conversions as it is, they have to go through and rotoscope, which rotoscoping is they're just cutting out each image to do that layering. But there's not even a rotoscope person. They're just saying, take this image and calculate what to roto or and mat.
Yeah, it's like some kind of auto...
Autoerotic situation.
Yeah, it's totally like that when you just are choking yourself with your belt and then all of a sudden everything's in 3D.
So yeah, so Google announced, if you haven't gathered, that they're allowing any footage that's been uploaded to YouTube to be 3D converted on the fly.
They've announced it, so it's not live yet.
I don't believe so. Okay. But so our
YouTube videos, Jason, will actually be in 3D if
we're on
the exactly. So we preempted Google's announcement by about 6 months by announcing this podcast.
So if anybody wants to know where to mail the royalty checks, Google, you can just I don't know how you guys want to split it up.
Disney
just,
Toon Studios.
Yeah, let's just say we do our podcast here every Wednesday.
Jason Carter,
care of Awesome Town.
So. We're going to go serious now for a second. Who's with me?
Let's do it.
Hold on. The camera's not around, and they can't tell that I'm raising my hand. So
I'm giving two thumbs up.
My hand's up. My
okay,
hand's
Jack's
up.
Jack's hands up.
Josh likes this.
We need to wait till the GoPro.
All right, goes full circle.
Yep.
So
and I'm in.
So I had a chance to go over to Disney Feature Animation the other day and watch a screening of a movie called Indie Game the Movie. Now, this was at Sundance this last year, and the filmmakers were actually there. The director and producer, I believe, were there and answered questions and stuff about the movie afterwards. But I wanted to bring this up because, you know, we talk a lot about video games. We're obviously a big fan of interactive entertainment. And I wanted to bring this up because this movie really, really resonated with me in a big way. Now, here's basically what the gist of this movie is about. You know, we talked earlier in the episode about this game called Fez. Fez is in development for 4 years. Fez is an indie game that just came out. It was developed by basically a two-man team, but really just one guy who had two kind of different partners over the course of this thing, and he spent 4 years making this game. It also follows a game called Braid, which, Josh, you and I have talked about that game on the podcast before, and another game called Super Meat Boy, all available on the Xbox Live arcade marketplace. And so this game, this movie follows portions of the production process of the building of these games, and it basically kind of chronicles what it takes to make these games, what goes into it, how everybody's feeling about it. And here's what really I thought was fascinating about this is it shed light on something, or it put into words something that I think has been developing now over the last, say, 2-3 years, which is video games up until really, I mean, I would argue maybe even the iPhone or digital distribution really came along, was all about the publishing model, right? It's all about a developer will make a game, or it will license content, make a game, go to a publisher who will then distribute it to Target and Walmart. Hmm. And that process cost a good chunk of change. And, you know, it became then there were the average games. There were the games like the knockoff, you know, every animated movie we do is going to have the associated video games that no one ever played.
Suck.
And then it went as high as the Call of Duties and the original Halos and these huge, you know, million-dollar blockbuster games. And when digital distribution came around, all of a sudden an easier access to materials to make games came around, you came up with this different concept. And this different concept is the indie game marketplace. And it's basically a person like you or me who says, I have a passion for video games and I want to make video games, but I have something artistic that I want to personally say, and I'm not going to be able to say that if I go work for Bungie or Infinity Ward.
Right.
I want to say that myself. And now all of a sudden I have the ability to do that. And so the whole focus of this movie was about how there are two arms now to making video games. There used to be that it was pretty much just the publishing model, and there were people who did it better and with bigger budgets, and there are people who did a little bit worse with smaller budgets, but it was still all the same model. And now there's a completely different thing happening. There's these two arms. There's one that's all about these massive blockbuster games, the Mass Effect 3, the Halo 4, these huge things, you know, Assassin's Creed. And then that costs tens of millions of dollars now to make. And then there's this whole other arm of I'm a guy in my garage who's making a game, putting it out there, and here's the key, making a living at it. Mm-hmm. And I was fascinated about this movie actually shining a spotlight on the fact that there are people now who make a living at developing 99-cent apps.
Yeah. Right.
But it was fascinating to me that is a whole industry now. The game industry is no longer go buy a video game. The game industry is now, well, there's different branches of it, really.
Yeah.
And I just found that very, very fascinating. And, one thing I know, I love you guys, and you know that, but one thing I will always say that I frustrates me the hell about you guys is you guys play one game. Not true, I know, an over-exaggeration, but Jack...
I really only play one game.
Jack and Adam, you play Call of Duty. And that frustrates the hell out of me because I want to say to you guys, there is so much amazing content out there that people have done. In the indie game wing, I get that blockbusters are the ones that are the polished and your first-person shooter junkies, but there is so much amazing content in this whole other wing of the game industry. That if you are a first-person shooter junkie, my challenge or plea to you is go download Limbo. Go try Braid. Go try Orcs Must Die.
Hey, I beat Limbo, just saying.
Awesome. Castle that's true.
Castle Crashers.
Yeah, and there's
amazing one, by the way.
Yeah, it's it, there's these amazing games that are out there, and I think they're the equivalent of like old school games, like, you know, they're side scroller games or they're things you might have played on the Game Boy or whatever.
I will say, you know, how many hours I put into Trials HD.
Yeah, that's another great one.
Like that game was fantastic.
Yeah, and they just released Trials Evolution, which is the
actually,
next one.
I will legitimately look into that.
So my. All I wanted to do is bring it up and hear your guys' thoughts on. One, I was fascinated by – well, first of all, sorry. One, please see this movie. It was amazing, an amazing documentary, incredibly well shot, beautiful lighting, really inspiring. One game developer who is so overdramatic, I cannot believe he finished his game, but still. Two is –
they're eccentric for a reason.
Yeah. Two is I'm fascinated by the idea that someone shed light for me to really think that it's not just – hey, Guy X tried a game, but people are like, that's an industry. Indie games is an industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also then wanted to encourage everybody to, you know, take go spend $6 and download an Xbox Live game or go download, go pay more than 99 cents for a really decent app game on the iPhone and check out these indie developers. And there's some amazing stuff being done. But, Josh, I know you wanted to.
We talked about this, I think, in one episode. I can't remember which one or anything like that. But regardless, yeah, I'm going to say 10.
It was 10 for sure.
Regardless. But the real big key is, I think, Jason, is before we didn't have such accessible tools. We talked about how there are so many ways for your content to get out there now. You know, with cameras, like shooting your own movie, for people to get discovered, you can go out and rent an extremely super powerful, high expensive camera for relatively cheap and film something breathtaking, you know, on a budget of maybe $500.
Yeah.
You know, same thing when it comes to indie games. You didn't have the ability to make a chip board like they did for Donkey Kong or something. You couldn't do these things the way that you can now. So now that things have more access, you know, you have, what is it? What is it to do to put an app like for the, it's like $100 for the
Apple developer.
SDK. Apple development, yes. You know, you pay $100, you can make a game. You can do that. Yeah. You know, you have, I know a guy at work, he makes games with his kids. You know, learning this stuff, they'll make a game. They will come up with an idea. There's also there's a thing at Seagraph where you have like 24 hours or 2 days or something like that to do this animation. You know, it's an animation contest and you come up. They have that same sort of competition now with game development. You have 48 hours to make this game playable, all, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
IGN just did a series called The Next Game Boss, which was, you know, they brought teams in, gave them challenges and stuff, and they had to make these games within, you know, they did it with like 6 episodes, but I think it was basically, you know, done in the span of, I think, a week maybe they shot it or something like that.
Hmm.
But, you know, the resources now are so, you know, available. For
and
us.
Affordable.
Yeah, and affordable. So, you know, this whole spotlight of people that wanted to do this and that dreamed of doing this can do it now. And so it's not as far-fetched to me knowing that stuff. You know,
I don't
knowing
think it's
going to
mean, though, that there's just all of a sudden going to be unleashed on the world a plethora of amazing games, though.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why all these people didn't get a job at a studio or aren't already at a studio. I mean, I think there's going to be great. I'm with Jason. I think there are already, and I think there's going to continue to be some really, really great indie games. And I think it's even going to cause a lot of the bigger studios for people to leave them to go do their own thing, be a Kickstarter or whatever. Yeah. But I mean, the hope, and obviously I'm sure you all know this, but I don't think it necessarily means, though, that there's a lot of amazing content, though. There's a lot of shit games out there.
Well, success. Jack, I will definitely say I agree. There's more content in general means more trash you have to sift through, but I would also argue it means more gems.
Yeah. Potentially.
Yeah,
I think potentially. Potential for that. I give you this, Jay. I tell you what. At E3 this year, I will. Like I said, I'm going to follow you around the floor, and I will play whatever you play, sir.
Nice.
Well, that's my vow to you.
When is E3?
June, I believe. Yes.
I think one of the interesting things, and I say this because Jason always harps on me about games and Xbox games, and because you have a significantly more games for the Xbox than I do.
Right.
I literally have three, and I play one of them.
And you probably play games more than I do.
I probably do play more. And it's this interesting thing. It's a combination of, I mean, you know, if you really broke down the reasons why I just continue to just play Call of Duty when I have game time, there's probably a couple. First is, and this excludes the Xbox Live Marketplace, which I've only dove into a little bit. I've done Limbo. I've done Trials HD, which I played both of those for, I mean, I put hours into both of those. And then Zuma. I did play that one a lot. I don't know if anybody knows that.
Oh, so did I, my friend.
That's like that the equivalent of Bejeweled type of
thing.
Yeah,
that was one of those ones. Played it on the iPhone or back on the computer. I don't even know when I played it, but I got it in college on the Xbox. I was like, holy shit, it's on the Xbox. But that aside, like the price point to get into a new game was $60. And it's like $60 when I know I like this game is just – I'm not going to risk it. And I know you can trade in games and you can get used and you can do that stuff. But there's always a loss and there's always a thing. And my – you know, it was this evaluation of I know I'm going to turn on Call of Duty and
– enjoy it.
90% of the time, it's going to go well. And granted, everybody plays online games and everybody wants to throw the controller through the screen and that happens. And but the majority of the time, I like it. And – the other one is because I do play multiplayer a lot, I'm good at Call of Duty.
Right.
You know, and it's like that kind of thing where it's like, is it worth it to take the time to get better at something else when, you know, right now my time isn't unlimited and I maybe get, you know, an hour, maybe half an hour at night kind of before I'm beat and want to go to bed, is do I want to dive into a game or do I want to play a game I know I can – play and then just be done. And it's like
I think a great equivalent for me is if you think about, you know, your personality type and you think, okay, I've got restaurants where I know that there's certain foods that I love.
Absolutely.
Is it better to go and try new things because maybe you'll find something that's even better, or is it better to stick with what you love?
Literally, I mean, Jason, I mean, we obviously are family. We eat out.
That's a great analogy, though.
My sister is your wife, and Red Robin is where we go on Sundays. And
we're big spenders.
You know, spending aside, it's like, it's just, I mean, I went to Red Robin with my mom Saturday and Sunday last week. But it's like, it's one of those things that I've always told Angie, my current girlfriend, super huge foodie, loves going new places.
I love that you called her your current girlfriend. As though you're implying that might change.
Wow.
So
Angie,
in my first wedding.
Angie, if you do listen to this, that's not planning on changing. I don't think you will listen to this, but you post on our Facebook, oddly enough.
Yeah, love her for that.
She's popped up a few times.
Angie
anyway,
rule!
Anyway, so I've told her all the times, I'm like, if you let me decide where we're going to go for food, I will pick the places I always go. I don't, just because I know them, and I don't care. If you pick, I will absolutely go. Jason, if I was sitting down with you and you're like, let's play this, I'd be like, okay. But if it came down to just me by myself, I'm going to play what I play.
Yeah.
You know,
no,
it's like
great.
A very,
I think it's very true.
And it was literally the food thing was just like, I do love Red Robin.
Here's the thing, though, too, to kind of piggyback on what Jack was saying with sifting through the junk and not and stuff. When the 360 first came out, you know, kind of roughly, you know, slightly before the PS3, there wasn't that many games that, you know, you can download. Geometry Wars was the first downloadable game I ever downloaded, and I played the fuck out of that game.
So just like lining up shapes like a motherfucker.
Oh, dude, and it was the most simplistic thing, you know, but just it, you know, simplistic idea. I mean, and it,
that
you
was
know,
Bejeweled for me.
Yeah, and it killed it. So much so that these little games I loved playing, and some of these games even came free. I'm sorry. I can't tell you how many times I've played Uno with just my friends. It's just
we played Uno,
you know,
the other day.
Yeah, we were. You know, we would sit there and we'd play, you know, some big game and stuff. And it's just like, anybody down for some Uno? Yeah, let's play some
you
Uno.
Play Uno online.
Yeah.
Online.
So
that's
like the four
awesome.
Of us, would, you know, four of my friends would, you know, we get into the thing where it's just like, oh, we don't have room for you, dude.
Oh,
like, you know,
sorry.
You know, playing. You know, and then
rejected from my Uno party.
Rejected from Uno, and then, you know, playing the game Worms.
Ah, I remember Worms.
Yes.
And no playing... iteration has been really that great since, like, the early computer ones.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
The Xbox One, I actually really, really
Was it good?
It. Yes.
The iPhone is shit.
Yeah. The Xbox One is a lot of fun. But now, Worms, like Jack is saying, there are great ones that are reviewed, you know, and get publicity. You know, like Fez. It's on the front page of IGN. They rated it a 9.5.
Shit.
You know, as this type of game. It's going to get the exposure now. You know, and it's going to get the exposure from the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and it's now going to I don't want to say ride the coattails, but, you know, it's going to sail off of that success. You know, when there are tons of other games out there now, like Jack said, that you kind of have to sift through. You will sit there and you go all games, or you'll go to Puzzle, and you will see a giant fucking list.
It's the same thing with the app store.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
I was just about to say that. Same
it is
thing
just
with
like
the,
you look at that, like you literally will, like, look at the app store and you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, here's, what's good? I'm going to stick with whatever's in the top 10, and then that's my limitation. I will maybe sift to 25.
Here's why I think that's a cop-out. I think that media does that for you. You talked about it. IGN, their job is to sift through the crap so that you don't have to.
Yeah.
They're going to report on the stuff they think is great. Find a blog, find a media company that has similar tastes, that has one or two games that they've liked, that you've liked, and then just roll with their punches, you know?
And I will attest this to being lazy in terms of if you're not out there looking for these games and you were to just sit there and go, you know what, I'm in the mood to just, you know, I'm going to go ahead and check this out and see what it is out there. You're going to go like... And there's, I'm not even going to download it. And then maybe you'll get around to going to the website and then researching it. That's if you want to. But for the people that are just on there and just like, you know what, I want to try something new today, you're going to be kind of like, well,
such a crapshoot.
Yeah, where do I go?
For sure. I hear that.
I think, I mean, Jason's restaurant analogy was nail on the head. and the combination of lazy gamer and... I know what I like.
Exactly. I'm going to go to Taco Bell.
I'm learning that if you don't go to Taco Bell on a regular basis, your body cannot handle it. I'm not kidding you.
To build up an immunity?
It literally, if you're not at least weekly, bi-weekly Taco Bell visitor, if you go, you will be shitting by the time you get home. Like, you could eat at Taco Bell, get home, and you have to shit.
How far is the Taco Bell from your home?
2 miles.
Okay, fair enough. That's a quick.
I'm not kidding you.
I got a question to you on this whole thing. Did you play multiplayer for Halo?
Yeah, little bits. Yeah.
Were you good at that?
Was I good at it?
Yeah.
What is that? You mean like
could did you play
could
well?
Could I kill other people?
Did you perform well?
Lead the team? I mean, was your ratio good? I don't know. Whatever it is to be good in Halo. I mean, did you feel like you were good at that?
Did you have fun?
Yeah, definitely fun.
Did I have good?
Did I have good?
Were you the top three in the top three?
Definitely not. Nope. No, absolutely not.
Did that wager at all why you didn't continue to play Halo Online? Did that factor in at all?
No, competition is kind of whatever for me. It's all about like, am I having fun doing the activity? I don't really care about the outcome per se.
This has come up just in my own. How did we play racquetball together? Because it's the exercise.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're supposed to play tennis, right?
Because I will say when we played racquetball, you took it so much more seriously than I did.
Oh, I fucking love racquetball.
But you were like, man, winning shots all the time. And I'm kind of like, whatever. Here's a lob.
Yeah.
I was just there to have fun, not to win. But you know, that's my take. Yeah. But I want to. I don't want
to
ramp.
It's hard to just be like that when you're doing a one-on-one.
Yeah.
Competitive game.
Yeah. It's true. Like, it's, you know? Like you can't. It's like I'm like fuck. I mean, I wasn't like. I mean. Crazy hardcore, wearing sweatbands and, you know, goggles.
Oh, I distinctly remember some 80s unitards.
That was different. That was because I thought
horse,
I...
If you're, like, you're playing one-on-one horse, it's casual. Except it's like, all right, let's play one-on-one. You're not just going to be sitting there and just
stepping
like...
Up, lobbing shots.
Like, you know, dribbling it with two hands and you're just, hi, all right, shoot it out.
That depends, right? I mean, isn't that... I don't know that I would agree with that. Like, what happens if you have two people that are kind of like... All right, we're going to play one-on-one, but we're really just here to kind of shoot hoops
and
chat.
You might as well just go in the back and just kind of doink.
But you're not going to do that while you play. Like, that's what I'm saying. You'll play horse. Yeah. And you'll just hang out and chat.
I've had
but
other...
to do a one-on-one competition where you need to be actively
Yeah, but you hit the nail on the head. Competition.
Oh, no. No. Can we just...
No. Don't worry. Don't worry.
Okay,
I'm not bringing that
up.
But here's the thing. I've had other racquetball partners... And that is not in quotes.
You've had
that
others?
Is not in quotes.
Jason, you've had others.
I
thought that was pretty just you and I. Was this recently?
Look.
Is this happened recently? Because we stopped playing, and I thought that was like, he's I stopped playing, you stopped playing.
Exactly.
What the hell?
Moving on.
Dropping some bombs here.
So
fucking truth bombs.
I've certainly had racquetball matches where literally we're just there to play, and honestly, the intensity level is so minimal. It's just kind of really running around hitting a ball against the wall, and there's a set of rules and guidelines that just kind of gets us out there, but we're just chatting the whole time.
Okay, and when it comes to that too, it also, to me, takes into account of your skill level. Is Adam better than you?
Probably.
That's the reason why. Because when he's better than you, he's wanting to play this to hit. And, you know, the
So the guy I was with, I was better than him.
Huh?
I think it comes down to Jason's just not that competitive.
I'm not at all.
Like
I
a
competition
just doesn't factor into it.
I mean, I guess that's the answer I was trying to get out of this,
Jason. Yeah,
I was trying to compare, like, you know, you were saying on me that it gets you to whatever, but I've been playing competitive gaming since 99.
Right.
And before that, I played competitive basketball my whole life. To me, this is it's just this continuation that Call of Duty has allowed me now to keep doing that,
sure.
I guess, in a sense of a term, with a little bit of what Adam's saying, which is, you know, my time's limited. I play when my wife and daughter go to bed, and I have, you know, I play till I get tired. And where that does allow me, and I you'll be proud of this, I did start playing the single player campaign in Modern Warfare 3 the other day.
That
a baby steps, Jack. Baby steps.
Just maybe a mission
but
or
I did
two
the same
at a time.
Thing with
don't
FIFA.
Don't fatigue.
There FIFA 11 when I got that. There was a stint in between there where I stopped playing Black Ops for a while. I'm like, I'm gonna play FIFA, and I got addicted and needed to go online and get competitive playing a goddamn online soccer game. It's like, okay, that's my type of personality.
And that's why
I'm addicted to those.
And I totally get it. And we're gonna wrap up here, but I kind of wanted to bring this full circle because we're talking about something interesting, which is competitive gameplay, because I would argue that there's not a lot of competition stuff on the arcade. I could be wrong, but the Xbox Live, like indie games.
Is there
games,
much multiplayer?
There's stuff, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm not wanting to sell anybody's sword, but I think the big, hardcore, like, competitive stuff is
especially
probably
it's
more
than just, it's like live competition. There's like
turn-based.
There's a lot of stuff that's turn-based or time, you know, like trials is like I could see Jason's time.
Yeah.
And
there's
I don't know,
leaderboard.
But I don't know if that's as much of a motivator as
it
is.
Totally motivated.
Is it for you?
That's what with Geometry Wars. Like we would play that and come into work going like, "Did you see my score?" And it's like, "No." And you look it up and you're just like, "Shit, you got a million?" And then it was just
that's
like,
old,
it was
funny. That's very old school. That's very much.
On.
Yeah.
Did you
it
see your Donkey
on.
Kong score last
that's,
night?
Yeah, because that's
so beat that.
That's an easiest way to tie people together, probably.
So. Here's ultimately my point is I think that this movie was fascinating to me because it really shed light on, you know, I'll be honest, I have played most of my games have been in the current branch of the big games, the Portals, the Halos, you know, that kind of come out and are in the publishing model by the massive multimillion dollar studios. And I just recently, over the last year or so, have started to dabble more in like iPhone games and Xbox Live games. And all of a sudden, I realized there's a whole other, even honestly, I almost want to call it an industry within the game industry.
Sure.
And so my challenge, honestly, I'll be honest, each one of you guys, Jack, you included, and anyone listening is, if you are a hardcore gamer, if competition is something that you love, that's great. Try this other wing. Pick something that's been rated incredibly high and just try it. Spend the $10, whatever it is, and give it a shot. And I want to just say the other really cool added bonus to that is the difference between the publishing model where you go out and you buy Call of Duty is you are paying Activision, who has paid a lot of money to disc manufacturer, who has paid money to Target to be on their shelves.
Yeah.
When you go buy an indie game, you are paying Xbox takes a cut or whatever for the digital distribution, and then 80% of it or whatever it is goes right into the developer's pocket. Mm-hmm. You're supporting somebody who has a passion about doing something and has done it and given it to you in a really easy to access way.
Sure.
Honestly, the only and this is just me, the only reason why I don't do it as often is because I mainly use Call of Duty games, all those types of games like Halo and stuff like that. for the fact of playing with my friends.
Sure.
It is what same thing with coming. I would not do a podcast like this by myself. It is strictly because I love hanging out with my friends, you guys. I love you guys, and that's why I want to do this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I run out to go get Call of Duty. I run out to go get Halo and stuff like that because I know my friends are going to, and I want to enjoy that. Now, like Batman, like Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, and stuff like that, I'm not a huge rush to get that game because as I know I'm going to enjoy it, I don't need to grab it first day because I'm not playing with anybody. Yeah. That is a time when I'm setting aside for myself to play by myself.
Right.
So
And I get that. And I think I will definitely be honest with you. You're by getting the big blockbuster games that everyone in the world is playing, you're going to get all of that and you're going to find all of that. And you may not find that in this other wing. My challenge is simply that
try it out.
Try it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Pick something and try it. And you may think this isn't for me, and good on you for trying. But if not, you may find that, like myself, like there is a whole incredible like section of games and things and effort that's been out there that I'm really in love with.
Yeah, I want to get those games, and I always plan on it. I just don't get around to it because when I do get on, I'm like, there's my friends.
Yeah.
Right.
I just want to like have fun. And to me, you know, I'm not sitting there getting pissed off and stuff. I'm having fun with my friends, and it's a casual thing. So with that, I'm just like, cool. If I got on and nobody was there, that's when I put on Brutal Legend and go through that game. That's when I get on and I play Portal 2 and I play these things single player, you know. But
and I definitely get that. It goes back to the restaurant analogy. I mean, if you have something that you love, you know, why branch out and try something different when you could potentially be let down? And I've had that. I'm not going to lie to you. In the indie games that I've tried, there's been a couple where I'm kind of like, wow, this is way overhyped. Yeah. But there have been some real gems. I mean, Adam, I know you recently you tried Limbo. And,
I did.
And
I played through it. I literally,
it's a beautifully artistic game, too.
Oh, my God. I literally – and it's a creepy game. Yeah. I remember in the dark, in my room, sound turned way the fuck up.
All of a sudden, the spider comes out.
Yeah. Like, I was like, holy shit. And that came – this is kind of now how I'm thinking about indie games is I'll let Jason sift through the shit. And then just pick his.
I don't sift through stuff. I mean, well, that's not true. I guess I do. I guess I'm one layer. But I
you're
going to
play more than I will.
That's probably true.
So when
and you'll
you
research
said,
more than
you
he
said,
is.
Try Limbo. The first time I really didn't know what you were talking about and ignored it clearly. And then you were like, did you try Limbo? I'm like, I don't know what you're saying. And then again, you were like, try Limbo, and I was like, okay. And then I did.
Yeah.
And it was
and to
Jason's
be,
my IGN. I'm with you, Adam.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I will say, if anybody is up for taking my challenge and you want some suggestions, Limbo is a great one. It's frustrating at times.
Oh, yeah.
I will say another one, Braid. Josh, I know you played that. I will say I'm not a fan of the art style, but the gameplay is revolutionary. Nothing short of revolutionary in my mind. Some amazingly complicated.
And the ending story. You didn't find it as fucked up as I did.
I think I missed a whole layer of that game that you got, but there is a story. There's a story there. To me, was overly crazily complex, but I think you actually got it.
Yeah.
But don't tell anybody. Braid's another one. Orcs Must Die, another really popular one.
Orcs or Works?
Orcs.
Okay.
Orcs Must Die.
They should. I mean, they should. They should.
These are
have it
they totally deserve it.
These are a couple of fun ones that I know we've played.
Trials.
Trials
was the first iteration. I remember that was back when I was living with
Let
you.
Let me tell you this. When you're talking about leaderboards, I have never been able to get anywhere close to any of your leaderboard scores.
Well, and then
Trials.
My leaderboard scores, and then you look at Platinum, and you're like, okay, not possible. And then you watch the video, and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Right, because that's
what Game Genie do they have on the Xbox Live account?
And those things aren't difficult because it's just that general physics game. You know,
yeah,
you
it's
have
a side
a
scrolling, it's
thing,
Excite
but it's,
Bike,
it's
but it's
basic
like,
physics. It's like a smaller. Yeah, it's like a smaller Little Big Planet, if you will.
Oh,
like that type of
know, but that game sucks.
Engine-ish.
Yep. So I believe we need to wrap up.
Balls.
But that was my little my plea, my challenge.
That's your ringtone, isn't it?
So again, check out Indie Game the Movie and try a new arcade game this week.
Exactly.
Give yourself some
lesson.
I like this weekly challenge.
Step out of your fucking normal life and try something new, you lazy people.
I'm going to go to a new restaurant, maybe?
Yeah.
Or maybe just try a new burger at Red
Robin.
Don't
do it, Adam.
Bring a
new burger at Red Robin. I don't want to do it.
Baby
I'm nervous.
Steps. Baby steps.
So this has been Nerdtastic in 3D, episode number 21. My name is Jason Carter.
Adam McFarland.
Josh LeBrant.
And joining us from afar... Sorry, I did that. My bad. Who are you?
I'm Jack Eckler, the one who knew what he was supposed to say, when to say it.
We pointed to the computer. You couldn't tell.
You couldn't tell. Nerdtastic in 3D.